You're listening to Review and Preview on Facebook Live.
How's it going, guys? Hank here, back at you with another episode of Review and Preview. No, once again, do not adjust your set. Tom, unfortunately, was not able to make this episode, and due to a shortage of availability of guests, I once again chose to go back to my well of the Empty the Bench Sports Network and bring him along, the producer of Game On, Nick Morgeson, in addition to the host of Empty the Bench. Nick, how's it going?
Oh, man, I'm glad to be back. And since you like to use numbers references for appearance, this is a Derek Jeter appearance for me on this show.
Or I would also go with Brian Leach.
Oh, that works too.
Greatest Ranger of all time, so why not? But, how you doing?
I'm good, man. This has been an interesting couple of weeks for the NFL, and we had an interesting week in the NFL, which I'm sure we're going to talk a lot about.
Oh, you better believe we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about a lot of NFL stuff, but we also have a very special guest coming on. That would be Gabe Flayton, the host of the show, The North Pole, even though we haven't had that show back on in a while. But hopefully we can talk about somehow reviving that show. And it'll be great to talk to Gabe again. It's been a while since we've had him on any show on the Review and Preview Network. So that'll be a lot of fun talking about his Minnesota Vikings and pretty much talking about the NFC as a whole. But before we get into all that, I would like to give you guys a friendly neighborhood reminder. Please don't forget to follow us on all of our forms of social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Review and Preview Sports. And of course, if you're watching this on the YouTube channel, please don't forget to hit that big red button down below. Give us a like, give us a comment, let us know your thoughts. We want to hear from you guys. And folks, if you're watching us on Facebook Live as well, please don't forget to hit that like button there too. Helps out with the Facebook algorithm. Helps out so that more people can watch the show as we go live. And without further ado, let's start with the recap of week 12 of the NFL season. And it was a pretty wild one, to say the least.
Yeah, I mean, you go all the way back to Thanksgiving, which feels like a century ago now. But we had a triple header on Thanksgiving. And I think I said this to you guys when you were doing Game On, that Detroit probably should have won that game against the Bills. Campbell is way over aggressive with the football, and it's cost him multiple games. They could be a 500 team this year.
It's funny because, like, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, Detroit's one of those teams where they're a better team talent wise than their record would tell. Well, actually, I don't know if they're necessarily a better team talent wise, but they should be better than what their record is. But they have definitely lost a good amount of close games. And, you know, it hurts me sort of that I'm agreeing with you. And as Tom would vouch for me on this, like, Dan Campbell is pretty much one of us. He's a Giants legend, at least in our eyes. But, you know, this is probably, I would say, at least the second time that Dan Campbell's over-aggressive coaching came back to hurt the Lions. I think this one was probably worse because, you know, it's third and one. You probably should be playing for a tie game, less than a minute to go. I don't care how badly he played during this game. I mean, Josh Allen threw a few bad picks, but you know what? Great quarterbacks are going to find ways to win in crunch time with under like 2 minutes to go.
Any
circumstances give that guy the ball back.
No, you can't give Josh Allen the ball back. Even though Josh Allen over the last, 3 to 4 weeks has been a little bit concerning since the injury he had and compensating for that elbow injury and it kind of been up and down. But the guy that I don't think we're giving enough attention to is Amon-Ra St. Brown. We're not giving this man his due. Like, he is The Lions need to do everything in their power to keep this guy. They have to.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think he's one of the more underrated wide receivers in the league. And that was the guy that I said that I would probably steal from the Detroit Lions if I could, especially now given the Giants' concerns at wide receiver. But yeah, no, definitely. He is talented. And look, the Bills are still hanging right in there in the AFC. They got a pretty big game coming up this Thursday, which I'm sure we'll probably talk about. But let's go on to the next game for Thanksgiving. And obviously, this is the game that really hit home for me. And this one, you know, normally when they lose a game to the Cowboys, I tend to feel pretty disheartened. And I guess you could say I was to a certain extent with regards to this week with the Giants. However, with that being said, you have to look at things in this perspective. The Giants were completely banged up. You didn't have your top two cornerbacks. Not only did you not have Fabian Moreau, you didn't even have Adoree Jackson. So both of those guys out. You also didn't have a good amount of your offensive line. Evan Neal's out. You don't even have your starting tight end in Daniel Bellinger.
The wide receivers are a problem too.
Oh my gosh. Not to mention like Kenny Galladay wasn't much action. I'm more and more by the day, I'm going to tell you that that's probably the worst free agent acquisition in Giants history. And I don't even know that there's a close second.
72 million reasons to rethink that signing. But when I look at this game, there was one.
Hold on. I have a banner that I kind of want to set up for that comment, but you know what? It might take me too much time. I'm not going to do it, but good old Dave Gettleman.
I haven't seen that one in a while, but there was one point in this game. And I think you and I talked about this and you agreed with me partially on it. Was Brian Daboll going for the first down on fourth and short, not at midfield, but probably at like the 40 in their territory. And Saquon Barkley drops the ball. Now, I don't blame that on Saquon. I blame that more on Dable for going for it, not even being at midfield. You can't justify that unless you're at midfield or in the opposing territory. That's what confused me. I didn't understand it. And that, I think, would you agree that kind of was a momentum changer in the game?
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, Johnny brought up an interesting question, too. Like, he says, is Brian Dable starting to... Are we starting to lose confidence in Brian Daboll? I mean, look, was it a mistake? Yes. But at the same time, like, I don't think that should really necessarily affect Brian Daboll with regards to the coach of the year standing in.
Right.
Yeah. Probably going to be talking a little bit more about the coach of the year once we bring on our guest in Gabe Flayton to talk about the Minnesota Vikings. But yeah, that wasn't one of the better calls, but I still think his play calling was much worse with regards to the Detroit Lions game.
Oh no. And by the way, I think he's a really good coach and he's really turned around the organization in ways. He kind of has a little bit of the aggressiveness side as a coach, which is good and bad at times, because he's willing to not take bullshit from players and
bite off kneecaps.
No. But at least he's not willing to take BS from the players. Hey, you screw up, I'm going to yell at you and I'm going to embarrass you for messing up on the field. Now, like I said, that could be bad at times because what do we know about athletes? They're fragile and their egos are fragile.
This is true.
But I like the way Daniel Jones is playing, and that's coming from me as a Jet fan, by the way. I think he's playing really good football. He's willing to move his feet, which he wasn't doing over the last couple seasons. And now he's making the plays happen rather than having the plays come to him. And it's working. Now, I know they lost the last couple games, but they're keeping themselves in games. And they're competing. And I just think the Cowboys were just way healthier, more options. And there's a certain name out there that everyone is fighting for right now also.
Oh, are you talking about the guy that I know people want to give a blank check to?
I knew you were going to say that.
It wouldn't be a discussion with us without bringing up blank checks, apparently.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't know how far we're going to go into that whole situation, but the Cowboys are definitely way more playoff run ready. The Giants need to get healthy. They could be a good team. I see all the makings of a good team with all the different parts, but they really need help with the wide receiver. But I don't think OBJ is that answer.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. But and I've probably repeated this point with Tom too many times on Big Blue Avenue, but as we pretty much said, you do not want to break the bank on Odell Beckham, especially if he's going to only really be a short-term solution to a problem that probably can be fixed in the offseason. I trust that Joe Shane pretty much knows what he's doing. And he knew that this going in, this was going to be a hard thing to fix with regards to the New York Giants, because like I said, the cap problems were pretty bad and Dave pretty much left him with a terrible mess. But let's put this in perspective once again, though. 7-4. Did you honestly think this would be where the Giants were at, like at this point of the season, as we now enter the beginning of September or December rather? Because look, we haven't seen meaningful Giant games past Columbus Day.
It's a good point.
So, you know, they've got a big game and we'll get into that a little bit, but let's talk about some of the other games.
Well, I just want to steal one more line that you would usually say. Did you expect them to go 7-4? Put your hand down. You're lying.
Yes, I like that. Yes.
Because no one expected them to be 7-4. No one expected New York football, which we'll get to the other side soon, but no one expected New York football to be competitive this year.
Both teams are 7-4, actually.
Right. So no one expected New York football, period, to be competitive this year, and they both are.
So let's move on to the next game. I'm going to skip over the Vikings game because, again, we're going to wait until Gabe comes on so that we can talk about that. We've got Carolina beating Denver. Broncos country, let's ride.
I mean, I don't know what to say about that, to be honest.
The Broncos are a mess.
Like, they're a bust. I think we have to consider them the bust of the year, right?
Nathaniel Hackett's a dead man walking at this point.
In his first year of coaching, too. Like, usually, like, when someone is so bad, they have an excuse. But it doesn't help when you have a big-money quarterback leading your team. You had a cut, Melvin Gordon, who has a case of the dropsies. I mean, and I'm sure we'll get to him going to the Chiefs, which, by the way, just made that team even stronger, in my opinion. But I don't know. The Broncos are a circus.
If only there was a certain sound effect you could use right now, but I think that's probably reserved for your show.
We've done it. Let's put it this way. On Empty the Bench, I probably this week alone played it about 3 or 4 times for the Broncos.
So now let's get to the next game to talk about. The Cleveland Browns beating the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That one was definitely a shocker. I mean, here's the thing that's like crazy. You have a minute 12 left to go. Cleveland's driving. Why don't you just call a timeout? And did you see what Todd Bowles said? And again, this was something that Jaguar Gator 9 rightly made fun of. He said, oh, the time was probably going to run out anyway, so there was no point in me really using my timeout.
What? Well, I should know about that.
He played the clip in his video when analyzing that play, and that's a real quote. I'm not making that shit up.
Oh, I see that comment already. That's up there in the comment section.
Browns get a win right before he gets activated. And
I don't even want to hear that name. That name disgusts me. But to get back to the Browns-Bucks game, this is probably the shocker of the week. Like, Tampa can't lose to Cleveland. I'm sorry. That looks really bad.
And also, even if they scored, if you use the timeout, even if they score a touchdown, who's the quarterback that you have that's done many a fourth quarter drive?
Oh, you're talking about Tom Brady?
Yeah, that guy.
That guy, the one that's won 7 Super Bowl rings?
Yeah, him.
I mean, you can't lose to the Browns. I'm sorry. Any Browns fans who are out there that want to throw stuff at me, go ahead. But you can't lose to the Browns. Sorry. There's two teams you can't lose to. The Lions, sorry Lions fans, and the Browns. Can't lose.
Those are fighting words because I was at a game where my team lost to the Lions, but oh well.
No, but I'm just saying, like, but one thing I'll say differently, the Lions are actually going to compete in the next couple of years.
Yes. And speaking of teams you can't lose to, Jacksonville. Whoa, what a comeback.
What a drive. What a drive. And then the catch in the end zone. You can't. They probably had to look at that replay a million times.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know what's going on with the Ravens, but Trevor Lawrence looked really great down the stretch on that drive. And then the gutsiness to go for two.
Yeah, absolutely. And we got a few more comments from Dan in there. Zay Jones has caught on the last 2 weeks. Absolutely.
Yes, agreed.
And let me take a look at his other one. Brady hasn't been looking to Evans as much as I feel, and they miss Gronk. Yeah, I could definitely see that.
I agree, but at the same
time, a special connection with Gronk, though. You can't yeah, deny.
Well, did you see the report that came out earlier today on social media that apparently he's rumored to go back to the Patriots next season if he plays?
Oh, yeah, no, I have not.
I don't know if I believe that, by the way. That's all hearsay. But to go back to that comment that Daniel made about Brady not looking at Evans. Evans has been hurt. He hasn't been a healthy player for quite a long time. I know he's back on the field, but I guess I think Brady's just checked out right now because of a certain off the field situation.
Well, yeah, but also there's another rumor about him saying that he might go back to the Patriots, and I don't know how much truth there is to that rumor, but
like I said, I wouldn't put any money on that right now. Cause again, how about getting through this year of football before thinking about next year?
True.
but that was a dumpster fire.
Let me quickly rattle off some more games before we get Gabe on. Cause he should be coming on in about 10 minutes. So Miami beating Houston, not a shock. Texans are pretty much going for number one pick in the draft and
record breaking first half.
Miami keeps on getting better. And I think the next game we ought to talk about would be your New York Jetropolitans.
Well, I mean, this is embarrassing, by the way. I got completely hosed picking the Bears, thinking they were going to beat the Jets. But I thought this was going to be like a field goal game because both teams' offenses struggle lately, especially the Bears.
Well, here's the thing. It's not like I necessarily blame you for taking the Chicago Bears. I mean, you look at the Jets and what they've been dealing with and a lot of all that off the field drama with regards to Zach Wilson. It totally makes sense. But with that having been said, there's a reason that I took the New York Jets, and let me go into detail as to why I picked the Jets, because Mike White had a good game, probably the best performance by any New York Jets quarterback this season. And the best quarterback by a Jets quarterback since, Mike White last year?
Wait a minute.
He had that big win against the Cincinnati Bengals.
Wait a minute. Give the fun fact you gave me.
Yes, Mike White is actually only the second quarterback to have multiple games within his first four career starts where he's had, I believe it was four touchdowns.
And 300-plus yards.
300-plus yards and a 75% completion rating.
I mean, wow. I mean, he incredible. I mean, first of all, Zach Wilson better not see the field for the rest of this season. I'm sorry. I know, and I'm a Jet fan, so maybe I'm a little favoritist here, but you can't start Zach Wilson. He can't throw the football. He can't throw it.
Again, though, here's the thing, though. If Mike White has a bad game, though, then what happens?
You got to live with it. It's growing pains, unfortunately. But, and I see the other comment in there, Garrett Wilson is special. Agreed. Yes. 100%. This guy is going to be special for many years to come. but Mike White is willing to take those risks and throw the ball in the air. Zach Wilson, there was one play, bizarre play, and what was it, the game versus the Bills the week before? It's 3rd and 17 on their 10. And they're running the ball on for 3rd and 17. Not even willing to take a chance in the air and throw it with Zach Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
That's my problem here. At least with Mike White, he's willing to almost throw his arm out to get a ball down the field. Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, I saw that too. Brees is a great kid too. Like when he comes back, he's going to be an amazing addition to the run game. I mean,
let's just hope that ACL doesn't really affect him, because you never know with guys who come back from that type of injury.
For running backs with the ACLs, mm-hmm. Quarterbacks with their elbows, with Josh Allen. I mean, you never know. But good win for the Jets. They're definitely going to be battle-tested this week. As you said, we're going to talk to Gabe about the matchup with the Vikings.
And of course, we got Cincinnati having a good win over the Tennessee Titans. I had Cincinnati winning that game. I don't know about you. And unfortunately for Giants fans like myself, the Washington Commanders had that very close win over the Atlanta Falcons. But see, here's the thing. And it's a real shame, because if it wasn't for the man who was running the team, I think this Commander squad would be pretty likable. No, don't you think?
I agree. And
that winning streak, good turnaround, Taylor Heinicke, like, winning a lot of starts. And, you know, I would imagine they're probably going to keep him going. I don't think Carson Wentz sees the field again this year.
And they need to get rid of that stench, which is Carson Wentz. First of all, Carson Wentz should be out of the league. I don't know how he keeps ending up with a job. How he keeps getting a starting job. He had one with the Colts, blew that one up with an injury. See if you catch a trend here. Commanders has the starting job. What happens? He gets hurt. And you know another team's going to take a chance on him.
What?
I don't know who, but I'm just saying someone will.
Yep. No, it's true.
But you could argue
that the Colts kind of ruined him because of the glue factory. And again, Tom pretty much brought up a point that I just made. You never know what happens with the quarterback who ends up tearing the ACL. And it's funny, like, we forget, but Carson Wentz had an amazing season in 2017. And I'm sure Daniel probably will tell you the same thing. Daniel Bagley, by the way, is a big Philadelphia sports fan. So, Dan, if you're still, like, tuned in, I want to ask you, do you think that the Eagles made the mistake by rushing him back from his injury too soon? Because I honestly thought that with Nick Foles as a more than capable backup, that's probably what happens.
They won the Super Bowl with him, for crying out loud. I mean,
I really think the Eagles kind of ruined Carson Wentz.
They did. Of course they did, because they were so desperate to make a deep run in the playoffs.
I agree with Tom to that extent, but I also think Philly didn't exactly help matters by rushing him back onto the field so soon.
But the problem is, these quarterbacks are so heavily invested in these days that they want their full investment out of the quarterback, and they forget, oh, wait, quarterbacks are fragile, and if we lose our quarterback, then we have to go to the backup, which is nowhere near the same.
Daniel brings up another good point. He played scared and never ran out of the pocket after the injury.
I agree with that. When you get hurt like that, you're afraid to get hit.
Yeah, it takes more than just physical damage. It's psychological damage too.
Right.
But back to the Commanders. Like, I think they'd be a pretty likable team. The only problem is, look at the man who's owning that team and look what they did just recently. Like, absolutely disgusting. How do you plan a memorial for one of your legends in Sean Taylor, and that memorial, well, actually, I would say more like a statue, but
I was thinking like a bronze statue. That would be a memorial, not a mannequin behind a glass box.
Oh my God, that is terrible.
And by the way, most people who didn't see it on social media, did you see the cleats that were on the mannequin?
Not to mention, look at the outfit. Like, I think he had like a Nike jersey.
Yes. But did you see what the cleats were?
No, what were they?
They're 2022 FIFA World Cup cleats.
What is wrong with that organization?
I swear to you, if you go and look, that's what they are. I could
say it once again. I understand that they are in contention for a playoff spot, but I truly do not understand how so many people can literally support a team owned by that horrible person who allowed that whole ceremony to happen.
You can't. It's despicable. This man, and by the way, and he goes, well, I talked to a bank. I'm going to sell the team. Okay, sell the team. Bye. See ya. No one wants you anymore. Happy trails.
So let's keep going and move on from that disaster. LA had a big comeback win over the Arizona Cardinals. For those of you saying that Justin Herbert is the problem with the Chargers, it's always fun to me. Like, what do you want him to play defense? I mean,
do you want him to play every position on the field?
Guy single-handedly led them to a comeback, and somehow I actually agree with Brandon Staley for once.
Whoa!
I mean, going for two there, I like that.
No, no, I'm just saying, whoa, like you actually agreed with Brandon Staley for a change.
Well, I mean, he played to win, and let me put it this way. If you're on the road and you're like down by one and you have the chance to win with the 2-point conversion, you play for the win.
Oh, yeah. That's what the Jaguars did. You had no choice.
And the Giants week one against the Titans.
Good point. Yep.
And the Oakland Raiders helped the Giants out big time, actually, too, by beating the Seattle Seahawks with that big Josh Jacobs run by it was 86 yards. The most on a touchdown run in overtime, by the way, since I believe it was Garrison Hurst who had a 90 something yard touchdown run against the Jets. What was it? Week 198 at Candlestick Park.
Yeah, I think you're right. By the way, did most of the audience, were they able to see the overtime of the Vegas Seattle game?
Oh yeah. That's such a disaster.
I mean, I'm not going to go way into it. I'll just say that Red Zone really screwed up. That's what I'll say. I mean, when you say a game is national, well, it was not part of the national doubleheader. That means once Red Zone was over, that was it. It was over. No one could see it. Only Vegas and Seattle could see the game the rest of the way.
If Vegas and Seattle saw it, but nobody else is there to witness
it. Did it happen?
And Kansas City beating LA again. I think the Chiefs just barely like covered.
I think the spread was 16.
I think they just barely like covered, or maybe it was a push. That's how big it was.
I mean, Kansas City, what, 9-2?
By the way, you ready for another fun fact?
Yes.
I believe San Francisco has given up 0 points in the second half of the game for like, what is this, the third or
four fourth? Games, four games. It was like 128-0 or something I was reading. It was like an incredible stat. So,
and last but not least, let's share your takeaway of the Eagles game before we get to the Monday night game. And then before we get to our friend Gabe Flayton, the diehard fan of the Minnesota Vikings.
I mean, Aaron Rodgers lost again. That's one way I would say it. By the way, I didn't expect 73 points to be scored on Sunday Night Football. No. That was incredible. And on top of it, Aaron Rodgers now has a broken thumb, which he said he's been playing with since week 5. And he's now got a rib injury. So, are you happy now you did it? Are you happy, Packers? Are you happy you spent the $50 million a year? Are you glad you have like $90 million in dead cap? I'm sure your fans aren't.
Yep. And Steelers versus Colts, once again, Jeff Saturday.
The clock management thing made me laugh. I don't know what to say about that. You've been in this league how long? You don't know how to manage a clock?
I mean, it's like his most experienced coaching was high school football. Oh, wait.
Oh, wait, it is.
But in any event, without further ado, let's bring on the one, the only, Gabe Flayton. Gabe, first of all, long time no see. How's it going, buddy?
It's going really well, guys. Thanks for having me on, and I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's been a while. Like, it's like the first time we've had you on any show since, what, 2020?
It's been a long time, yeah. I took a long time off. Been working, student teaching, and going – getting my master's degree. So my time off has been, you know, it's been busy, but lacking something that I love so much. And that's talking football with some dudes in the middle of the week. And it really, this is what I live for. So I really appreciate you guys just having me back on to talk about something that I love doing so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So let me just ask you first right off the bat, and Nick, feel free to ask Gabe some questions of your own if you want to. So I talked about with my New York Giants how, you know, if you told me they would go, that they were going to be 7-4 at this point in the season, I probably would have looked at you like you had three heads, admittedly. Like, that's how realistic I am with my expectations for the Giants. And quite frankly, if you had told me that they would win 7 games, I probably would have believed you, because that was my exact prediction for the whole season. Now, with regards to your Minnesota Vikings, if I had told you that the Vikings would be 9-2 at this point in the season, what would your reaction have been?
I would laugh. I mean, I wouldn't expect 9-2. I certainly wouldn't expect that success. But I don't think I'm surprised, because that initial press conference that you saw Kevin O'Connell in the offseason, he clearly had a vision for this program, this franchise, and it wasn't going to be anything less than success. So I think his leadership certainly changed everything. Kirk Cousins hasn't had a leader, a true leader. There's been multiple reports since Zimmer leaving that he was doing a lot of things to hold Cousins back. I never really liked Gary Kubiak's offensive system, but in general, having four different offensive coordinators over the course of 5 years or 4 years was not helpful for Kirk, and he needed help. I mean, he's a great player, but he needs a good system around him. Dare I say he's a system quarterback, but in this situation, I mean, he's in a great system now. You're not relying on Dalvin Cook like you used to before, and you're getting a bunch of new receivers involved. And to be honest, with the Hockenson trade, we have the most Pro Bowlers in the whole NFL right now, in terms of the voting. So in terms of talent, the talent's there. I think now we have the leadership. So 9-2 isn't crazy, but certainly above expectation.
I mean, speaking of Kirk Cousins, winning a primetime game for the first time in what seems like an eternity. Do you see this as like a moving forward point? Like now, oh, we won a primetime game. This team is great. You see a lot of greatness for this team going forward?
Yeah, that's a big one. The primetime win and getting to see them play, you know, and win these close ones this year. The close games were always a loss last year. And for the last 2 years, we were awful in late game management. You mentioned clock management before. Our biggest problem was underneath 2 minutes. Over the last couple of years, I think Fox always loves to bring it up during the broadcast, how bad we are underneath 2 minutes. And that's because Zimmer played really aggressive with his defense. He had press coverage. He sent pressure. Now our whole philosophy is bend, don't break. So is that a philosophy for greatness? Maybe not defensively. I don't think we have a high ceiling defensively right now. I think our ceiling is where our offense takes us. So I think we're under the sort of, we're basically playing offense and defense. If we have a good defensive game, that's great. But I think our destiny falls in line with our offense and how far they're willing to take us. And that's not the traditional way to win a Super Bowl, but the Chiefs did it a few years ago, and I'm hoping the Vikings can use their offense to do the same.
Absolutely. And let's talk about Kevin O'Connell. So obviously I'm going back to my New York Football Giants a little bit, but obviously, you know, I am a very high, big advocate for Brian Daboll in winning Coach of the Year. In fact, even though I didn't think the last 2 weeks were necessarily his best job, I still stand by that. However, I think you could probably make the argument that Kevin O'Connell should pretty much be in the running, because Gabe, like you said, even though the Vikings had the talent, and obviously if you ask Tom, he will tell you that the Vikings were the most improved team, which I agreed with, although I don't know that I necessarily thought they were going to win the division like he did. So I'll give him the credit where credit is due in that department. Where do you see him with regards to the Coach of the Year rankings?
I can't give it to O'Connell just because there's also Saleh with the Jets. I mean, that team is clearly his creation. I think there's some things you can't coach. Does O'Connell coach Justin Jefferson? Is he the reason why Justin Jefferson's breaking out? Probably not. So I think the ways we're winning, it's not necessarily the system as much as the talent. I think Coach of the Year he's a great leader, great coach. I love O'Connell, but there's teams like Shanahan, what he's doing with the Niners. There's teams that seem more methodical that you can clearly associate their coach. Daboll, you can absolutely associate the improvement of Daniel Jones. Whereas Kirk Cousins was always good. Now he just has a little bit better. You could even You know, give more credit to the general manager, the way he drafted with Christian Darrisaw. Maybe the only reason Justin Jefferson is breaking out this year is because Kirk Cousins isn't getting sacked every 5 seconds, because Christian Darrisaw is really protecting his blind side. So I think O'Connell has been extremely great, but I don't know about coach of the year per se.
Well, you brought up Justin Jefferson. Now, at the beginning of the year, not so great. Kind of needed to get his sea legs under him. Now, finally emerging. This team really runs around him, in my opinion. I mean, it could be different for everybody. I think he's definitely a top five in the receiver category. Probably actually a top two or three, in my opinion. Would you agree this team is really his to run, so to speak?
I think you nailed it there, Nick. I think Justin Jefferson's the sheer talent that he has, his ability to make these 50-50 catches that Kirk Cousins is just throwing to him because he knows Justin Jefferson can catch it. I think Dalvin Cook has declined this year a little bit. He doesn't hit the hole as hard as he used to. And I think he's bouncing a lot of runs to the outside that he could really be running through the hole. Like Alexander Mattison, if you watch Mattison play, he hits the hole immediately and gets 5 yards. That's all we're asking. I think Dalvin Cook has taken a lot of bad runs, bad takes, but I think in general, yes. And Thielen is not the same player he used to be. He is definitely not worth what he is getting paid. So I would completely agree with you. I think this is Jefferson's team, and I'm praying to God that he does not get hurt and he continues the success.
Oh, definitely. I completely agree. Justin Jefferson is an absolute beast, and thank goodness that there is no that we avoided the alternate universe of a certain horrible team from Philadelphia. But let's talk about this defensive unit. How have you been feeling about that?
I mean, like I said before, the bend don't break strategy. We have two high safeties the entire game. And if you watched against Dallas, if you watched against New England, these are teams that can run the ball really well with good offensive lines. We don't play well against teams that can do the little things well, like block and run the ball, the simple things. And I think the 49ers are the first team that come to mind. I would be terrified of seeing the 49ers with their offensive line. A team like the Colts, I think, would run all over the Vikings. I don't think their strategy defensively with Ed Donatell is necessarily wrong. I wouldn't say it's bad, because it works, and we're 9-2, and we do cause a lot of turnovers, and we have a resurgence from guys like Patrick Peterson and Za'Darius Smith, whose careers were sort of written off by their former organizations. So I can't say Ed Donatell's defense isn't great, but I don't think their ceiling is very high, because they don't necessarily play with that much aggression. They kind of play a little complacent. So I'm not huge on the defense right now, but we do have Dalvin Tomlinson coming back, whom, you know, is an excellent run stopper. So I'm hoping he can be a big help in the interior in stopping the run.
So I want to look at the rival team, obviously, the Packers. We were discussing this a lot. Obviously, the whole Aaron Rodgers situation. And well, when they won the first time, did you see that as kind of the turning point for the Vikings really going off to have a great season? Or do you think the Packers were just really on a steep decline? Because we see all the injuries they have. What do you think it is?
That's a really good question. I mean, which week did we beat the Packers? It was, I want to say, I can't remember off.
It was early on, right? I think
it was early in the season.
It was week one.
It was week one. Jeez, yeah, it feels like so long ago. I can barely remember. But yeah, we definitely gained confidence from that win, because O'Connell getting his first win in his first career game, that felt good. I mean, it definitely felt different. It felt weird, like, to beat the Packers week one when they were the defending North champions. It felt odd. I wouldn't say that felt like the turning point necessarily, because maybe it did feel like, geez, this Packers team isn't the same Packers team. As a Vikings fan, you usually give respect to Aaron Rodgers. I mean, I give a lot of respect to the guy. With weapons, or even, you know, a little bit of help, the guy's amazing. I my initial instinct though, Nick, was that this team is not the same. This Green Bay team is not helping Aaron Rodgers. And I have a good friend who's a Packers fan who would say the same thing, that it's not Aaron Rodgers who's to blame. It's his surrounding supporting cast. So I was skeptical for a while, to be honest. I felt like the Bills win was the first time that I felt like the Vikings, you could use the word legit to describe them.
Well, here's the thing. I am going to agree to disagree with regards to Aaron Rodgers, because in my thinking is, I mean, he took a lot of the money, made the bed. Now he's pretty much got to sleep in it. And as a result, you lost a good amount of talent.
I mean, you're so, $50 million in dead cap now at this point. I mean, well, it's really $90 million in dead cap, but $50 million in salary. They couldn't keep Davante Adams. I mean,
this is why I respect Tom Brady more than Aaron Rodgers, because Tom Brady takes less money just to keep talent around.
I could agree with that. I mean, Coach LaFleur never seems to me to have a clue when I watch Matt LaFleur like coaching. He definitely seems like he defers to Aaron Rodgers to do a lot of the thinking. And I don't think he's put that team in a position to succeed offensively. I mean, he kind of just leaves it to Aaron Rodgers. That's why I give Aaron Rodgers a lot of credit, because I think he's had to make a lot of his success on his own. And you make a good point. He did make this bet, and now he's still sleeping in it. But I do think he needed more help, schematically to work around the deficiencies. They look like they're trying to run the same offense they ran last year, which it's a great offense when you have the weapons that he had. But I think they need to go to more ground and pound. Personally, I think they should have a fullback. I think this team should be much more reliant on A.J. Dillon for rushing. I think they use him really well in that formation with the two running backs. But I think you could really become a ground and pound, use A.J. Dillon as Derrick Henry, and slow the clock down and keep your defense off the field, which they aren't really doing at the moment.
It's an interesting situation. I mean, the Packers are going to have a lot to assess in the offseason, the way that they're playing. And it also didn't help. They lost both games to the Vikings. That's another two games, if you want to think about it, theoretically off the top.
We got one more to beat them, but we will beat them.
Yes, that's what I meant. Yes, they won the first one, and I think they're going to win the second one.
Easily, but yeah. The division is not good all around. It's a down year for the division. That the Lions, though, they're coming alive.
I don't know. I like the Lions in the future. Well, I think they'll be more competitive sooner, but
yeah, who knows? Let's just hope that Dan Campbell can be careful with his over-aggression.
Actually, Tom made a good point also in the chat that the Vikings will be the first team to clinch their division. Are you surprised how quick they're going to clinch the division?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, even in the beginning of the season, you had the Bears at 3-1. Packers were 3-1, and I think the Vikings were also 3-1. So we had a situation where I thought it was going to be, you know, a race till the end. And I make a bet with my friend who's a Packers fan every year. I bet him like $100. Vikings going to win the division. He bets on the Packers. I've lost the last two. So third time's the charm on that one. But in general, though, it's always us or the Packers. In my lifetime, it's typically been the Vikings or the Packers winning the division. The Bears and the Lions have always been an afterthought. So they really have to prove a sustained amount of success like the Vikings and the Packers have before I really feel like these are teams that could threaten us on a consistent basis for the division.
Yeah, I mean, it's good football. It's competitive football. Do you want to talk about the matchup for this week, Hank? Or
yeah, no. Well, actually, before I do, I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about your takeaways from the win on Thanksgiving against the New England Patriots.
Loved it. I mean, we gave up too many points to Mac Jones, who should not be putting up that many points on us. We needed a special teams touchdown to really win that game. That changed all the momentum. But at the end of the day, I mean, a win's a win, and we're getting these gritty wins where we have to come from behind. I think we like to play from behind more. We like to play with urgency, because O'Connell has that McVay in him where he likes to play with urgency. And that high tempo is really, really great when you can throw the ball well. and keep defenses on their heels. And I think we move the ball so quickly sometimes that we end up allowing a lot of possessions from the other team, which gives them more points. So I think you have to look at scores with the Vikings relative, because we're going to score a lot, but we're going to give up a lot too, because that's our philosophy.
It's a good point.
Yep. Again, and like you said, they're pretty much a bend but not break team. And, you know, another thing I want to talk to you about is, so you mentioned the San Francisco 49ers being your most feared team in the NFC. Who are the other teams that you view as a big threat?
Well, absolutely. The Eagles are still.
Right.
They're so talented. And those additions of Linval Joseph, former Giant and Viking, and Ndamukong Suh, those are the kind of additions that the Vikings should have been making, and we haven't. So I think they're very much a threat. In the NFC, I mean, teams that can run the ball, there's not a lot of them necessarily. So that's my fear. Teams that can ground and pound and play in a cold weather environment. Those teams who want to play dirty, they want to play aggressive. I think we're a softer sort of team, and not necessarily our personnel. I just think we use our personnel in a conservative, complacent way. I think we have very hard hitting players, and we have some beasts on our defense. I just think we're not using them as aggressively as Zimmer used to use them. So I think, I think we're third. I think we're third right now. I think it's the Eagles and the 49ers, and I think we're on the outside looking in.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, I think that probably makes sense. I mean, I'm pretty much on record saying the 49ers are probably.
We both were. We were both saying that the addition of CMC really brought that team over to a different level. Totally. I mean, they didn't have a running back, really. They were injured in running backs the last couple of years. But now that you have CMC, you can run downhill and they don't have to worry about it anymore.
But anyways, I think, Gabe, Nick, do you guys want to preview the next game, since it's pretty much you guys against each other, with Gabe being the Vikings, Nick being, of course, a diehard fan of the New York Jets. So, let me, ask you both this question, and I would say both of you can probably give one answer for each of your teams. And, I feel like I'm kind of borrowing from another show that I do. You may have heard of it. It's called Big Blue Avenue. What are your keys to victory for the Minnesota Vikings? I'm going to start with you, of course, with that question, Gabe.
I think it's going to be a very high scoring game. I think it's going to be a high scoring game. So the keys to victory, though, is don't turn the ball over. I think we have such little understanding of what Mike White brings to the table, because he's only played in one game, that I think he's going to have a lot of success. We might not really know a ton. And I know he played last year, but I mean, if Mike White compared to like Mac Jones and some of these middle, like Andy Dalton lit us up in London, and we got lit up by Mac Jones, and we've consistently gotten lit up by Cooper Rush in the past. So guys who have come in and you expect to just beat them because they're inferior at quarterback, that does not apply to Minnesota. We typically play down to the opposing team's quarterback. And I'm not giving any knock to Mike White. I think he's actually a really solid quarterback. So I think if we can not turn the ball over offensively and force a couple turnovers from Mike White and special teams, I mean, if we could get some big chunk kickoff returns and really play that, because I know Saleh always coaches the special teams well, and he coaches everywhere really well. I think it's going to come down to the little things, turnovers and just stuff like that. And just pure determination to win.
I mean, I'm just praying. I mean, I told Hank when we did this earlier that I thought the Bears were going to destroy the Jets. Boy, was I wrong about that one. Winning by 21. But I think the big thing is, on the Jets side of things, you can't give up a special teams touchdown like you did last week against the Pats. That, I swear, I threw something at the wall after the way that game went. That was a couple weeks ago, but yes, like, you can't have a special teams touchdown. You gotta, like you said, play the special teams well. Mike White looked great, but again, you don't know what you're going to get from him week to week. it's nice you got 300 yards. And as Hank pulled out that fun fact from earlier, that one of two quarterbacks to have 300 yards, four touchdowns, and a quarterback rating over 75. I mean, like,
or completion percentage.
I mean, completion set, percentage over 75. You can't hope for that every week. The Jets got to play defense. That's how they win games. And if they don't play defense, they're going to get annihilated. We've seen it happen. They should have won the game against the Bills. They should have won the game against the Pats. They lost both.
There's teams that have, like, we've had some games like against Washington and the Dolphins, I think of games that I felt at the time. And that's another a couple teams where we played a backup quarterback going into those games. And we struggled. I mean, Teddy Bridgewater played for half of the game in Miami, and then they brought in the third stringer. I can't remember who it was, but we didn't dominate these games against very sub-average, subpar quarterbacks. And I think, like, Mike White has a receiving core. He's got guys like Andy Dalton didn't just light us up because he had nobody around him. He had Chris Olave. He has guys around him, Alvin Kamara. And you guys have that speed on the outside. We don't have a ton of speed on the outside. We're working with Patrick Peterson, who's very, very up there. And we're working with really a modgepodge of just rookie corners on the other side. You guys could expose us on the outside if you try to.
The thing I'd be worried about for the Jet defense, obviously Jefferson, even though, like you said, Thielen is on a decline, you still have two guys there that are consistent, that can catch the football. That's one thing that the Jets sometimes will struggle with, playing like a cover two, trying to covering these two guys, trying to get them not catching the football. Like, it's just, I'd be worried about Jefferson. That's the one guy. I think you're going to see doubles and triples on Jefferson most of the game.
You should. Don't play cover two. If you play cover two, it's just going to let Kirk Cousins dictate. You have to be aggressive in I know week one, that we talked about week one earlier, the Packers ran like cover two the whole game. And it was ridiculous because we were expecting a nice Jaire Alexander, Justin Jefferson matchup, and we didn't get it. The Packers just gave him 180 yards receiving and didn't have to work for it. I don't expect you guys to be that complacent. I expect you guys to double and force us to throw to guys like Osborne and Thielen. And I think that would be my expectation, is that Jefferson probably won't win this game because he's going to be so caught up with.
Yeah, I mean, or you could go the other way. Let him get the yards and block everybody else. There's two ways you can go with it, really. Just don't let him score. You want him, let him have as many yards as he wants. Just don't, make sure he doesn't get in the end zone. So, I don't know. I'm nervous, but I'm glad that the Jets benched Zach Wilson. It was time. They had to. People have yelled at me multiple times. What do you mean you're benching? Even Hank, you said it at times that you thought it was weird. That
I did, and I stand by what I said at the time, because generally speaking, I'm not really for benching a quarterback in year two of his development stage, especially when he hasn't really made that many starts. But with that being said, considering what he did in the press conference and considering that Robert Saleh was in a very tough situation where he pretty much, you know, had to take control of the locker room. Like, I don't think the Jets really had a choice. I think they had to bench him. And, you know, and I also warned you the risk that you're going to get a quarterback controversy. And look, even though Mike White has done great in his return, and even though, like, you know, maybe he's been the better QB, like, the problem with the quarterback controversy, especially when you have two young ones, is you either have one quarterback or no quarterbacks. And, you know, now basically it's going to look like Joe Douglas is essentially admitting he made a mistake when he took Zach Wilson so early. I'm sorry, but that's the risk you run. I don't mean to be that Debbie Downer, but
you're right.
That's the facts.
The one difference I will say also is that Kirk Cousins would never make that mistake on the post-game press conference stand. I'll tell you that right now. As much as we've gotten on him for that viral moment, you like that, you like, I mean, which was all funny and all.
And Kirko Chains.
And the Kirko Chains, yes, on the airplane. Yes, but that's funny at least. Like, Zach Wilson was being serious. Like, he said he was joking, but you could clearly tell, like, he doesn't care.
Kirk Cousins, that we've never had. I actually contemplated Kirk Cousins career has only lasted this long because of how well he maintains himself, even through very average seasons we've had in his first 3 years. I mean, I thought maybe they wouldn't extend him, but I think it is that character that has kept his career really, like, he's been the guy since 2012. He's been a starter for most of his time, and he's been really consistent. So I never had to worry about that with Kirk.
Thank God. I don't know. If we could just get a consistent quarterback situation, I would take Kirk Cousins of all people in a Jets uniform.
You almost had him.
Well,
so yeah, before we let you go, another segment question that I'm kind of borrowing from Big Blue Avenue. Who's a player that you would steal from the Jets? And Nick, I'm going to ask you the same question, who you'd steal from the Vikings.
Wow. That's an excellent question.
That is a good one.
Oh,
man. Yeah, no, Tom and I, you've seen us on Big Blue Avenue. Tom and I asked that question to our like opposing interviewer like all the time.
Well, coming into this year without knowing what Darrisaw brought to the table, I'd probably say Mekhi Becton just for the future.
Mekhi?
Mekhi Becton, yeah.
Yeah.
But honestly, at this point, I would go with corner, Sauce Gardner. Having that corner, that lockdown corner, is something like we haven't had since Xavier Rhodes' first couple years before he became useless, before the Rhodes closed on him. So I would say Sauce Gardner. It makes too much sense. We need a corner, like a good man-to-man corner that's young and has a future. So I'd go with him.
And it seems like Tom appears to agree with you on that in that statement, and I think that's a good answer. He's been an absolute lockdown player for the New York Jets. And Nick, let's turn it over to you for a Viking.
I mean, I could go master the obvious in two directions if I really wanted to.
Sure.
I mean, I could say Justin Jefferson. That would be the obvious answer. But for now, I'm actually going to say Kirk Cousins, because we really need a quarterback in the worst way. I know Mike White was great for one game. What happens if he gets hurt? Where do you go next? Are you going back to Zach Wilson? I hope you don't. I mean, because I wouldn't trust him. I would take Kirk Cousins if I could get him. Because at least you're going to get consistency at the position. I know he's going to throw two or three picks a game. I know, because he makes those aggressive throws down the stretch. But he's going to throw for 250, 300 yards almost every game. And he'll put up at least two touchdowns. And that's what you need.
Yeah. You would win the Super Bowl if you had Kirk Cousins. You would be up there right now.
You'd make a deep run, at least.
Absolutely.
I think if you had Kirk Cousins or Matthew Stafford in his prime as your quarterback, Nick, I would probably,
as long as he wasn't hurt, yes.
Well, I said in his prime and health.
Right.
So no, and I said the same thing, by the way, not for nothing, about the Chicago Bears in 2019 with Matt Stafford.
Yes. We all wanted Matt Stafford. When we saw Matt Stafford go to the Rams, all the NFC North teams, not named the Packers, all wanted Stafford. I mean, that was a tough loss, but Cousins has come around. His development, his improvement. If we could give a most improved quarterback award, I would give it to Cousins.
Not for nothing, by the way, but I actually agree with both your answers, by the way. If I were going to steal one of your guys, put him on the Giants, I would definitely consider Sauce Gardner, only because right now, as I mentioned, we played that Cowboys game without having our top cornerback, top two cornerbacks, actually. And as far as our receiving core goes, I mean, that pretty much speaks for itself. So obviously, I would take Justin Jefferson. I don't think there's really any better receiver in the game right now other than Justin Jefferson. Actually, no, I don't know if that's entirely true. Maybe Stephon Diggs. Imagine the universe of them playing together on the Vikings.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if that actually happened?
If we would have had to get rid of Thielen.
Surprisingly, Tom.
Thielen is such a fan favorite in Minnesota, but if it would have been very interesting because they were getting paid roughly the same. So it was interesting that we opted to get rid of Diggs instead of Thielen, because it felt like they were both the same at that point in time. But clearly now one is aged a lot better than the other.
I don't know. I would have kept Diggs, but
yeah.
But Thielen's Mr. Minnesota. But
we wouldn't have gotten the first rounder, probably. That's the thing. So we wouldn't have ended up So it's always, I think it worked out, but yeah, Thielen is Mr. Minnesota. I love Thielen. I got a Thielen jersey, but it's going to be interesting. He's going to have a big game this Sunday because Jefferson should be locked up.
And by the way, speaking of moments with Sauce Gardner, the game in Green Bay, I think that was his real turning point.
Yeah.
Totally taking down Rodgers. And
oh, and then when he put on that cheese hat afterwards.
That was so funny. And then I forgot which Packer player it was, knocked it off his head. But I think a game of turning moments, that's his turning moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, anyways, Gabe, I want to thank you for taking the time to join our episode. I'm sorry that we couldn't have Tom on here to talk some football with you, but I had a lot of fun talking with you. And by the way, Gabe, fun fact, I think this is the first time that I've ever really done a show with you, believe it or not.
It definitely could be. I mean, this was a lot of fun. I'm sure Tom was saying maybe an appearance on Big Blue Avenue when you guys face the Vikings in a few weeks. But
I don't want to speak for Tom, but I'm sure you will be more. I'm sure he would be more than happy to bring you on Big Blue Avenue. And, you know, I would probably tell you the same thing.
That's going
to
be a big game. That's going to be a big game for the Giants, too. It's going to be a game for both teams.
It's going to be huge. It's a must win. We got to beat some of these NFC East teams. I'm tired of losing to them. But all right, guys, thank you so much. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. And yeah, Skol Vikes.
Well said, Gabe. Always a pleasure. Great to see you again. It's been way too long. Have a good one.
You too.
That was Gabe Flayton.
That was fun.
Formerly of the North Pole, and hopefully maybe one day that show will make a revival. But due to Gabe's schedule, we do not know, but he is definitely one of the more fun guests that we have on Review and Preview. And although as far as I'm concerned, he still is pretty much part of the Review and Preview family.
He's fun. I've actually watched his show quite a few times when it was on here, when I was first getting the lay of the land of the RMP network.
Yeah, that was right around when Big Blue Avenue made its debut. Hard to believe that was a few years ago.
Holy cow. Wow.
And this couch, like, was actually, this couch wasn't even there when, like, Gabe started with the network, because, like, I had a couch in a different direction. That's how different the studio looked. But yeah. In any event, those were the primitive days. And let's do a few quick segments before we end the show. Studs and Duds. This is a segment that Tom created. So we are going to name I'm pretty much going to give you my five studs for this week. And of course, I'm also going to give my five duds. And let's start with studs. And Nick, how about you give me your first stud?
So this is from this past week. That's how this segment works.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I had to give this segment some thought. I would say Trevor Lawrence is a stud. I can't believe I'm going to say that because of the way I think Jacksonville's finally figuring out how to turn it back around. I hope that momentum carries them. I know people are going to get mad at me because it's the Jaguars, but I would put him up there as a stud. I think he's finally showing, and you can see with the leadership that I think they're finally starting to turn it around. That's at least one for me.
That's a really good choice. I think this may have been his signature victory for the Jacksonville Jaguars. And as a matter of fact, it was the first time in a while that the Jaguars had won a game like trailing with like less than a minute to go or something like that. So that was definitely huge. And for Trevor Lawrence to get his first big comeback like that, I think that could be a huge confidence booster for him and for the Jaguars going forward. So I would say that's a great choice. However, as far as quarterbacks go, I'm going to go in a different area than you. I am going to go with Justin Herbert because he single-handedly has kept the Chargers afloat. I don't want to hear people saying, oh, how come he can't do everything and why aren't the Chargers better? Shut up.
That's ridiculous. I mean, his coach is also against him at certain points.
Well, yeah. I mean, he like was having him throw all those checkdowns, but yet when it came down to it at the end of the game, he led them on that game-winning touchdown drive, had the two-point conversion, clutch win for him, and it keeps the Chargers afloat in the playoff race too. So I think Justin Herbert definitely is more than deserving of a stud for me this week.
Yeah. Also in that stud category, I can't believe I'm going to say this too, but Justin Jefferson would also be a stud. Actually, I shouldn't say I'm surprised, but I was going to originally say Kirk Cousins, but I went with Justin Jefferson. Justin Jefferson, in my opinion, has finally come around and remembered that, oh, wait, I can be a top three wide receiver in this game. I can be up there with Stephon Diggs.
He might even be a top receiver.
Actually, he might be a top two, top one wide receiver eventually. Over the next 2 to 3 years, he will be the top receiver in all of football. Some of those catches that Gabe was referring to, those one-handed catches that he was making from Kirk Cousins, some of those he shouldn't have caught.
Right?
It was insane, some of those catches he made. Yeah, total stud this week.
My next stud, I am going to go with Josh Jacobs. Why? I mean, hey, 86-yard run, touchdown run in overtime. That speaks for itself. Keeps the Raiders alive, barely. I mean, they're probably, their playoff hopes are still pretty much on life support, but they're spared the electric chair at least for 1 week. And at least for 1 week, you can't really blame Josh McDaniels for a loss. And hey, helped out the Giants.
It's a good point. Everything, we always look at hindsight is 2020. Another one I would look at, and the bias is about to come out, but Mike White.
I was waiting for you to say him. I was trying to
avoid trying to be careful and put a few players in there first before, but Mike White, 315 yards, had the passer rating over 75%. I mean, he's going to be the starting quarterback the rest of the year. He has to be. As long as he's healthy, he will be the start for the rest of the year. That's I tried to wait as long as I could on that one, but yes, he's a stud.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would also have to go with, this is probably going to be a cop-out, but I'm going to say the San Francisco 49ers defense.
Interesting. Okay. I don't have a problem with that.
0 points in the second half for consecutive games. Nick, there's a reason why I've been so high on this team for like a while. Like even last year, I thought like they had a chance to like sneak, and look what they did.
I agree with you. Yeah.
Although granted, I think their quarterback situation could be better, but that's neither here nor there.
How many studs do we have left? One more? Or
yeah, we can do one more.
Okay.
I'll let you take the last one.
Okay.
Be a coach, by the way. It could really be any player whatsoever.
This is a tough one. I know you, like you said, the Niners defense. I would kind of say Miami's offense would be a stud as a whole, because it's kind of hard to pick one. You can't pick one. Tua looks great. Jeff Wilson, even though he's not running for 100 plus yards, he still is running for touchdowns, and he looks like he's fit in right away. Look at Tyreek. He's playing great. Look at Waddle. They're all fitting in chemistry-wise. So I would take the Miami offense.
And now let's talk about our duds. So, Nick, I am going to let you start off with this one again.
Do I really want to pick on this person, even though you've told me that you've trusted him a lot over the weeks?
Go for it.
My dud is, I can't believe I'm going to say this, my dud is Tom Brady. And the reason
I don't know if he's necessarily the biggest dud from.
I wouldn't say biggest dud. I just said in the category this week of dud.
Yeah, no, that's fair. That's fair.
Because you can't lose to the Browns. I'm sorry. You're a 7-time Super Bowl winner. You beat these teams. I don't know. What's the best way to say it? You beat these crappy teams. And now they're dealing with a PR nightmare off the field. You can't lose to this team. Sorry. Tom Brady, you're a dud this week.
I'm going to give you another dud. How about Mr. R-E-L-A-X?
That's a good one. I mean, the rib injury on top of the broken... God. That's so bad.
Another dud. I'm going to go with the head coach for this one. Jeff Saturday.
Yeah, I agree with you.
After those timeouts.
Clock management. I mean, you could throw a Todd Bowles in there if you really wanted to also.
Oh, Todd Bowles is just as deserving.
All right, I'll take that one then. Okay. Okay,
that's fair. Let's see. How many more?
I think you have one more. I think you do.
Did we really have? I would probably.
I just saw the comment that Tom just put up.
let me see it. You know what? Fine. We'll give it to Kenny Galladay.
Yeah. All right.
Fine. I agree with that one. Kenny Galladay. Let's just
$72 million mistake.
Actually, I'm sorry, Tom, but I have to throw another giant in there. And the reason I'm throwing this in this giant in there is because I'm really, really getting concerned about the status of his shoulder. That's Saquon Barkley. 22 yards against Detroit and only 39 against the Dallas Cowboys. Now, granted, he did score a touchdown, but there's a lot of panic going on about him in Big Blue Nation.
I mean, if he can't run the football, they're a little bit in trouble. I should say a lot in trouble if he can't run the football.
Absolutely. So those were our studs and duds for the week. And before we end the show, and let me do another one. <As Johnny.
laughs> Hey, Johnny, if you're watching it, there's your promo right there.
So now let's talk about our top week 13 games. So
there's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, no, and there's more games with two teams above 500. Obviously, we talked about the Jets and the Vikings like in depth when we had Gabe, so I'm not really going to go over that one too much. But Buffalo and New England, Thursday night football matchup. Buffalo is a 4-point favorite. That should be a really, really good game and could be a big decider for the AFC East. And if the Bills win, I think the Pats are in pretty big trouble, I would say.
The Patriots have to win. That's a must-win game for the Patriots. Like you said, if they don't win, they're basically their division hopes were gone from the first week of the season because of who was at quarterback.
That he is, by the way, Tom.
Yeah. But yeah, they got to win. The other game, and I think this is the game of the week, in my opinion, Miami, San Francisco.
Oh, that game. I got to ask, how was that game not flexed?
How is that not a primetime game, you ask?
It's not the game that they flexed.
We said that on Empty the Bench the other night.
Like, you have Miami, who's arguably the hottest team in the NFL, and I'm still convinced they might very well make a surprise run to the Super Bowl. Would not shock me at all. And you and I have already talked in depth about San Francisco. That needs no explanation.
It's a great game, great matchup between offenses and defense.
Pittsburgh, if you look at their schedule, actually has an outside shot at maybe going on a win streak, and now they're playing the Falcons in Atlanta.
It's interesting. I'll say that much. Mariota, by the way, has played way better than anybody thought this year.
Oh, I was just about to get to this next one, and I think Tom brings in a good segue. I like the Titans to upset the Eagles this week. Tom, I hope you're right, but I don't know. I'm just if I was sold on the Titans and their quarterback situation, I would probably agree with that, but. I don't know.
Your offense is one person, in my opinion.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know if I want to take that bait.
And I know this from experience from this quarterback being in our division all these years. Ryan Tannehill is not exactly the best trustworthy person.
You like this comment, though. Mike Vrabel, Nick Sirianni. The only thing is, I don't know if the coaching argument can really help there, because as good of a coach as Mike Vrabel is, I don't know if Tennessee has enough to beat Philadelphia, especially in Philadelphia too. That's even harder. And
I mean, they lost to Cincy. You think they're beating Philly? No, at least not from me.
Hell no. And now, of course, we got to talk about, speaking of NFC East teams, my New York football Giants against, yeah, I still call them the football team, even though.
Yeah, I know. By the way, when I was looking at that line, I don't know what's going on in Vegas, but they had the Commanders as a favorite.
I mean, I wouldn't act like it doesn't make sense, because, I mean,
it's a little confusing. Little.
You look at the fact that the Commanders have a good amount of receivers compared to the Giants. That right. being said, the Giants defense is more than capable of being able to win this one.
And I agree with you. And I think I actually took the upset when we did the picks that I think they could win that game outright.
It's special.
Yeah. I just don't. The Commanders are not, are like a bad stock in the stock market. They'll go up one day and then they'll crash down a different day. So, well, partially due to their owner, but that's a whole different issue.
Yeah, no, I think I'm gonna, here's how I look at it. I believe in do, as Michael K would say. So, Giants have lost three of their last four. Something's got to give, but let me list out a few positives. Number one, the Giants will be coming off a long break because they had 10 days off after the short week from playing on Sunday to Thanksgiving. Now they'll have more time to rest up. They're probably going to get a good amount of reinforcements. You're probably going to get back Evan Neal. You're probably going to get back Daniel Bellinger. And if you have Aziz Ojulari and Kayvon Thibodeau,
whew, that's a pretty sick line. Like,
good luck there. And look, I understand Washington has a pretty strong defensive line too that can match it, but I think the Giants, honestly, and I feel nervous picking them because most often when I pick the Giants, they find ways to lose, but I think they can win this one. But Tom says 23-17 Giants, and you know, you'll see us get go more in depth with this matchup tomorrow night on Big Blue Avenue. Once again, shameless plug of that show, but it's
preview, so. But yeah, I would say they definitely could win that game for sure. As long as they stay.
Not for me saying I'd be surprised if Washington found a way to win, but I just think like Washington being favored, it is kind of a stretch. I agree with you there.
Yeah, I just, Vegas the last couple of weeks has made me scratch my head with some of the lines. I don't know why. They're like begging you to take teams that you would never take.
The next big one, Kansas City against Cincinnati.
Yeah, I think that was either a 2.5 or a 3-point favorite for Kansas City. I actually think that's not big enough. I think Kansas City is way better than Cincy. And even though Jamar Chase is back, there's going to be rust that has to be knocked off. So I think they win that by a touchdown at least. I think they're giving Cincy too much credit.
Yeah, I agree. Chargers against the Raiders should be very interesting. I mean, the Raiders are actually two games behind the Chargers, believe it or not.
I saw a comment in here. I don't know who it was, but it said Oakland when Carr leaves.
So then don't do it, Hank.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Shots fired from my own co-host. No, I'm kidding. I don't mind. Tom and I give each other a good amount of crap. Like,
I know. It's all I give. Oh, man, you should see what we do half the time.
Oh, I can only imagine.
But, Oakland's a dumpster fire in every way, shape, or form.
Well, technically, you're right. That city is pretty bad.
Oh, well, Vegas. Vegas is a dumpster fire.
The only problem is they no longer play there.
Well, the comment says Oakland when Carr leaves.
Oh, Dan. Definitely been sleeping on that, not that news, like something else you slept on, but that's okay. Dallas against Indy, that's the Sunday night game, which again, I don't know how you didn't remove that in favor of Miami against San Francisco.
You want to know what the line is on that game? It's 11 points. Cowboys favored by 11.
I mean, I get it. They're the Cowboys. They're America's team. How about them Cowboys owned by Jerry Jones?
How about them Cowboys? Oh, God. I mean, you got to take that matchup out of Sunday Night Football. How do you not? They flexed the game, though, for week 14 already. Did you see that?
At least that one. Well, yeah, because nobody in their right mind wants to watch the Broncos.
Yeah, so they screwed Patrick Mahomes. Oops. Well,
Patrick Mahomes has got plenty of primetime exposure. Do you think we really feel bad for him?
No, but I'm just saying, like, you took away the Chiefs for the national audience just because the Broncos have gotten way too much time. I mean, how many national games did they have already this year?
I think you know what I have to say.
What?
Broncos country, let's ride!
That thing is going to be a joke forever and ever and ever.
And last but not least, are you ready for Tank Division? Saints versus Buccaneers.
It's actually a big game, believe it or not, if you think about it.
That's why I'm laughing as I say that.
I mean, you have a 5-6 Tampa Bay team that's on top of the division. 5-6. But when you look at the rest of the teams in the division, who's beating them? Nobody. No one.
They're winning by default.
Right. I mean, I'm looking at the division because I have it in front of me. Are the Falcons beating you? No. Are the Panthers beating you? Absolutely not. Are the Saints beating you? You don't know who their quarterback is every week. It's a mystery box, as you would say.
It could be anything. It could even be a mystery box.
So no one's beating you. So as long as you can stay healthy.
By the way, I don't think our buddy Noah would even like to argue with you about the Falcons at this point.
Like I said, Mariota has played way better than I ever thought he was going to. I thought he was going to be a complete scrub, and then they were just going to cut him at some point. They're not cutting him this year. He's actually playing decent football.
Right, but I'm still not sold on Atlanta. And as far as this game goes, Bucks by default, although Brady actually, since joining Tampa, has had a pretty bad track record against the Saints, believe it or not.
Of all teams, right?
Other than that one playoff game, like he's only won, like, I think one regular season game against them.
I just found it funny, though, when Brady went on his SiriusXM show. It said, I'm taking this one on the chin for losing the Browns. Okay, that doesn't accomplish anything. Good, you took it on the chin. You still shouldn't have lost.
All right. Well, anyways, that will pretty much wrap it up for our episode this week. And Nick, once again, this was a lot of fun coming on and filling in for Tom, who hopefully we will have back next week. But Nick, is there anything you wanted to add before we go? And also, why don't you plug yourself as well?
Empty the Bench Network at ETB Network. That's our network platform. At ETB Sports for Empty the Bench across all platforms. Also on our network, Game On at Game On ETB as well. For Johnny and Hank, who are part of this network too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And hopefully we get a good week of football.
I don't think the football gods will let us down, so I'm pretty confident that we will. Nick, it is always a pleasure. And folks, once again, before we go, friendly neighborhood reminder, please don't forget to follow us on all of our social medias. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Review and Preview Sports. And of course, please don't forget to hit that big red button down below. Give us a like, give us a comment, let us know your thoughts. We want to hear from you guys. Folks, you have just watched another episode of Review and Preview. Hopefully we will get Tom back next week. But until then, I'm Hank Addictor, and I will see you guys later.
Good night, everybody.